China has emerged as a global superpower on the economic front and increasingly militarily, but its ambitions know no bounds. Now it wants to dominate world football. Over the past few years, China has pumped billions of dollars into the game, purchasing foreign players, coaches, even entire European clubs, and it's grooming a new generation of local stars. This massive investment is not producing dividends just yet, though. The Chinese national team lost 1-0 to Iran last week, which makes it unlikely that China will qualify for next year's FIFA World Cup in Russia. But for China, a World Cup is the long-term goal, and it's regarded by many as an inevitability. Tonight on ABC TV Foreign Correspondent Program, our China correspondent Bill Birtles will take a closer look at China's obsession with football. And he joins us bright and early in Beijing. Bill, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
Tell us about China's ambition here, Bill. Why is it so determined to rise to the top of world football? Talking soccer here, the world game.
Well, it's a little bit like the Olympics in a way. China, through its state sports program, invested heavily in Olympic sports, and it paid off. In 2008 here in Beijing, they topped the gold medal tally. So there's a sort of similar idea, but this time there's more private sector involvement. And it's coming right from the top. The president, Xi Jinping, he's made it clear that he himself is a soccer fan, but also, too, he thinks that soccer is a growth industry in China. There's plenty of potential there for both the domestic league and for things like international sporting rights, streaming and TV rights. So the government sees soccer as economically a good thing to invest in, but also there's just a lot of national pride on the line. The national team has been such an underperformer for so long, and the fans are really getting impatient. So there's two elements going on. There's this economic element, but there's also the desire for a successful Chinese national men's team that can do the country proud.
Sure, but, I mean, national pride's all very well. They can't win everything. We'll talk about the level of investment because it is massive. How much of it reflects that the president at the moment, Xi Jinping, is a huge football fan, therefore he's backing this? And how much of it is linked to, you talked about the economic impacts, but soft power? You know, it is the world game. Is this another form of soft power that China wants to wield?
I guess it is. Nobody's really put it to me over the past few months when I've been looking at this that this is a soft power initiative, because I guess soccer is such a global game and China has been such an underdog on the national stage for such a long time that nobody's really put it in those terms. They've sort of seen it more as a case of similar to the Olympics. The Chinese people want to have a national team that can make a World Cup. That's the first thing. They've only ever made one once and they lost every match. So they want to be able to make another World Cup and become a regular fixture. They want to win a World Cup. So that is a national pride element to that. But also, too, the Chinese government, the president endorsing soccer, basically makes it a politically safe investment for big state-owned companies and for also big property developers. So the spending really took off over the past few years after it got that endorsement right from the top.
Give us a sense of the spending. I mean, is it in the junior development? Is it buying top coaches? We know a few players, star players from around the world, including Socceroo Trent Sainsbury, have been lured there. Tell us about the size of the investment.
Well, over the off-season transfer window, Chinese clubs outspent everybody else. They spent close to 550 million Australian dollars buying top international players. So that was more spending than English Premier League or any of the European leagues. So that's a huge increase from just a few years ago. This has been a really rapid rise in the amount of investment. And 2 years ago, China was second only to the EPL when it came to that sort of purchasing power. So they've already catapulted to the top dog when it comes to the ability to nab major stars. It used to be a league which was only attracting players who are pretty much on the way out, but now they are buying young Brazilian stars and European stars who are in their prime. But the other thing we're seeing is Chinese companies purchasing outright European clubs. We're talking about Trent Sainsbury. He's contracted to one of the major clubs over here, Jiangsu Suning, but he's currently on loan to Inter Milan, the Italian giants. Now, the only reason this loan came about is because Suning, this massive electronics conglomerate, which owns both the Chinese club in Nanjing and Inter Milan. They bought the Italian club and thus were able to loan him there at the end of the transfer season. So we're seeing a Chinese investment in Manchester City, Chinese investment in several other European clubs. And so there's obviously an idea that it's not just good enough to build a strong, lucrative domestic league. It's also, in theory, profitable to have ownership stakes in major clubs in Europe as well.
You mentioned Trent Sainsbury, former Socceroo. He's been lured to the Chinese club, but as you say, now on loan to Inter Milan. Not bad. Let's hear from Trent Sainsbury. This is an excerpt of your show tonight.
Of all places, I don't think this would have been in the top 100, to be honest. China, yeah, I didn't think I'd ever play in China, to be honest. It was always, English Premier League was always the top target for everyone, and then obviously other European leagues. But yeah, China's just exploded out of nowhere, so, and it gives great opportunities for players like myself to set themselves up after football while still enjoying themselves.
Socceroo Trent Sainsbury. So you can see the attraction of that. How long do you think it'll be, though, Bill, before China has to doesn't need to sort of recruit from, you know, buy top players from all around the world, but recruit from its own talent pool? Because the talent pool is enormous. I think it's got its sights set on, by 2025, having set up 50,000 coaching schools, drawing on 50 million young players. I mean, inevitably, with that kind of talent pool to draw on, you're going to succeed, aren't you?
Yeah, well, in theory. I mean, China's problem has long been that per capita, there haven't been that many junior players playing soccer. This is the big issue. This is why the national team hasn't lived up to expectations, because there isn't a strong junior development base. And so the big question is, all this money is going to the top. A lot of it is going to foreign stars. Is it being squandered? It looks like now the money is starting to flow to the grassroots. So that aim of having 50 million regular players, in theory, they should be able to achieve it, but there really isn't a strong soccer or football culture here the way that you get in Europe or also Australia too, where a lot of kids play for junior teams on
or
weekends.
Or in South Korea or Japan, I suppose.
Can they pull it off? That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah, when, I think, perhaps is the question. Bill, just finally before I let you go, the Chong Yifeng, the UTS professor, was released from custody in China. He returned to Australia on the weekend. He'd been blocked twice from coming home to Sydney, was interrogated by Chinese authorities for more than a week for endangering state security. Do we know yet why he was detained, and did his detention, it coincided with the visit to Australia of the Chinese Premier Li Keqiang, which I thought was unusual. Any link there?
Just on the first thing, both him and his lawyer have said that they aren't exactly sure what the specific reason for the investigation was. Feng Chongyi said that the questioning was wide-ranging, so clearly it was linked to the research that he was doing. Meeting people who are prominent in the human rights community, and activists and lawyers who have been in that field over the past few years have been targeted by state security investigators here in China. So no doubt that was the main cause of the investigation, but he himself and his lawyer say they're not clear exactly what they were getting at. As for the timing of it, what's really interesting is Li Keqiang was in Australia that week. He was trying to convince Australian politicians to ratify the China-Australia extradition treaty. Clearly not a good look. The 1 week detention of this professor. Now, what a lot of the scholars over here are saying is, frankly, if the state security ministry in China had more respect for the personal power of Li Keqiang, they would not have allowed this incident to have happened during the week that he was in Australia. So there doesn't really appear to be a link. It seems more to be coincidental timing that they acted while Feng Chongyi was in the country. But what people are saying here is, no, it was probably a matter of disrespect to Li Keqiang that they allowed him to be detained during that week.
All right, Bill, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.
Bill Birtles, ABC's China correspondent, and his foreign correspondent goes to air tonight. It's called The Big Goal at 9:30 p.m. on ABC TV or on iView anytime. You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 13 minutes to 9.